Scripture reading this evening is from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 and 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might.
Good evening. I wanted to sort of bring another bit of information for you. We just learned that Kevin Barker, Karen's son-in-law, broke a rib, and we've been asked to remember him in our prayers. And so a daughter is here, and mother-in-law are here, so we want to remember Kevin in our prayers and add him to our prayer list. And of course, his wife is also on that prayer list, so keep them both in your prayers. It's amazing. We can put a lot of trust in a tin can, a metal can that we're going to get into, and we're going to fly at 500 miles an hour, 35,000 feet above the air, being flown by two folks that we don't even know. Isn't that strange? That's what we do when we get in an airplane, and that's all that we're going to be doing. But we put our trust in that. And the text that we're going to look at is one that really calls us to trust God. The real danger is that we sometimes want to play games with God. We will say, God, I will if you will. You know, we will do whatever if only God will do this. And so we're sort of playing games of sorts with God. It's important for us as we move through this text. We're going to begin with the Deuteronomy text because Jesus is going to cite that Deuteronomy text. And we're really going to begin, I flipped it the other way around. Let me go back, slide on past, and I'll come back to that. There we go. Here's our Deuteronomy text, and interestingly enough, we're going to begin in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 4. That's sort of the beginning of this whole larger section, but I thought I really ought to begin there because that's the passage that is perhaps the most important passage for all Jews. It's called the Shema because in Hebrew it begins with that word Shema. Hear, O Israel. And it's a wonderful text that is recited every single Saturday by every Jew. They're going to cite that passage because it is so important to who they are. And so our text begins, Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. It's an important passage, and it begins with that word hear. You need to understand that in the Old Testament, that word hear and the word obey are really the same word, because the assumption is if you hear God, if you really hear what He's saying to you, you'll do what He says. And so hearing and obeying are one and the same. And so the call here is to hear God and to obey God. And you'll notice they emphasize this who this God is. He is the Lord. He is our God, and He is one. And again, that's very important for Jews. You see, they lived in a pagan world that had all of these different gods who were supposedly doing all of these different things. But there's just one God, Yahweh God. The Lord, and that word is Yahweh in the original, the Lord is God, and we're supposed to love Him, and that loving Him also calls for us to love Him. Notice the text says, you shall love Him with all of your heart, and by the way, for them, heart is not, you know, we use the heart as the symbol for what you love. And so you love Him with all your love, that doesn't really make a lot of sense, but you see in their culture, the heart is the place where you make your decisions. The will is with your heart. And so you decide something. Interestingly enough for them, you love with your belly. I know that seems strange to us. But do remember, if you're reading good old King James Version, it'll talk about bowels of compassion because you feel for them in your stomach. And, you know, we talk about folks who have butterflies in their stomach because of their love for somebody. That's the kind of feeling. But the heart is where you make your decision. And so you love Him with all of your heart, with all of your will. You put Him at the front. And then you love Him with all of your soul, with all of your person, with all that you are deep down inside. And then finally, you love Him with all of your strength. Interesting word, a word that is talking about the physical side, putting everything into it. But it's an interesting word that appears only twice in the whole Old Testament. The other passage, interestingly enough, is in 2 Kings chapter 23, verse 25. And it's an interesting text about a man named Josiah. Remember Josiah, the young guy who becomes king? And he's a very noble king, and it does a lot of things and brings folks back to studying the Bible and restores temple worship. He does all of the right kind of things. The text says, "Before him there was no king who turned their heart to the Lord with all of his heart and with all of his soul and with all of his might, except Joshua. There was none before him, and there was none after him." That's a pretty high compliment for good old Josiah. You know, you think of good old David before him and Hezekiah after him. And, you know, there are a lot of great kings. But Josiah, a young guy, is a really good king. And we sometimes miss, I think, the significance of that. But the call here to love God with all of your heart, soul, and might or strength is important. It's with all of your being. You got to put God first. And Jesus, in a few moments, is going to do that for us in a very real way that I think will be striking for us. And then after that comes this exhortation. "These are the words that I'm commanding you today. They shall be on your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your sons. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." The call is for parents, here fathers in particular, to teach their kids and to teach them who Yahweh God is. They're supposed to do that all of the time, whether they're sitting down or walking or rising, lying down, rising up, wherever they are, wherever you are, you're supposed to be teaching your kids about the Lord. That's an important lesson for those of us who have children, and it really is interesting because he'll go on and say that that's something that grandparents are supposed to do as well, to teach their grandchildren about who Yahweh God is. There's incredible sharpness to that. Our text goes on, really we're going to skip down to about verse 16. "You shall not put the Lord your God to the test as you tested him at Massah. You should diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God and his testimonies and his statutes which he has commanded you." This is the verse that I'm really quoting, I'm really dealing with primarily this evening because it's the verse that Jesus is going to quote. Don't put God to the test like you did at Massah. It's interesting because at Massah, they're going to say, God, you know, God is supposed to be our God, but we're thirsty and we want water. Now, he's been providing them with water all along as they wander in the wilderness. He's provided them with manna to eat and quail to eat, and he's taken care of all of their needs. But they're saying, God, hey, God, you need to show up here. You know, you need to do something for us. They're putting God to the test. If you really love us, God, you will. And Moses is saying, I don't want you to be like that. Don't put the Lord your God to the test like they did back there, like your ancestors did, like your parents and grandparents did. Now, it's really interesting to me. We talked about this passage, about some of this morning. It's interesting because you got to remember that as good old Moses is writing, it's been 38 years. Folks who were 21 years old and older have died off. And so now you've got some folks who were 20, and 38 plus 20 is going to make them in their 50s. But they would have remembered those events. And so they're called to remember what happened back there, and don't be like that. Don't put God to the test. That's not who you're supposed to be, and that's not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make the difference. You've got to devote yourself to Him and to Him alone. "You shall do what is right and good in the sight of the Lord, that it may be well with you, and that you may go in and possess the good land which the Lord is swore to give to your fathers by driving out all of your enemies from before you, as the Lord your God has spoken." If you'll do this, if you'll obey God and you'll really love God, you'll go into the land and you'll take all of the land and you'll drive out all of those enemies. Those giants that you're afraid of will all be taken care of. I know your parents and your grandparents weren't ready to do that, but you better be ready to do that. And I want you to put your trust in God. The call is, put your trust in God. Don't put God to the test. Now, we talk about test takers. It's really interesting because we've learned one of the things that we've learned as faculty members at universities is that some folks aren't good test takers. You know, when it comes to taking the ACT or the SAT, they don't do well on those exams. They're a lot smarter than that. They just don't do well on those exams. But basically, Jesus is a good test taker. He understands what's happening, and he's going to be able to take that test and make the difference. Now, let me back up and go to the passage. Here's our passage from Matthew chapter 4, beginning at verse 5. Then the devil took him up to the holy city and had him stand on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up so that you will not strike your foot against a stone." Interesting language. There's a change of scenery now. Jesus has been in the desert, and he was hungry, and the first temptation was, turn these stones into bread. And Jesus says, no, you've missed the passage. The passage is, man doesn't live by bread alone, and he quoted a Deuteronomy passage. And this time, he takes him to the pinnacle of the temple. Now, the word for pinnacle of the temple is an interesting one. It's the word, literally the word is wing. It's the word we get pterodactyls from. You know what a pterodactyl is? My folks are shaking their head. Yeah. It's a flying dinosaur, okay? Because it has wings. It's the wing of the temple. And it's the wing. And what I've given you a picture of in the background, well, you can't hardly see it there. In the background is that corner of the pinnacle of the temple. From the pinnacle of the temple, the top corner there of the wall, down to the valley below it would have been 450 feet. And so the devil says, jump off. If you'll jump off, God's got to save you. You know, he promised that he would save these folks who do that kind of thing. And interestingly enough, the devil could even quote Scripture, can he? He quotes Psalm chapter 91, so the devil can quote Scripture as well. He will rescue you. He will protect you. He'll protect the one who dwells in the shelter of the Most High. And in a very real way, this may be his temptation to Jesus. Why don't you take a shortcut here? You know, you're going to be going to the cross and you're going to die on a cross and all of that's going to be terrible. Why don't you take a shortcut? If you'll just dive off of this high point and the angels will come and catch you and everybody will see that, they'll say, ah, there's the Messiah. And they'll all get it, right? Because that's the kind of grand stance that, you know, nobody can miss that. But Jesus understands what's being done there. Very much like Israel at Massah, the temptation is for him to not trust God, but to put God to the test. And he's trying to do this. It is not God, I will, if you will. It's not that kind of thing. You see, that's what the devil's trying to get him to do. If you'll do this, God has to. After all, that's what he's promised. And so he's trying to get Jesus to jump off the pinnacle of the temple. And it's interesting how Jesus will respond. And here's his response. Whoops. His response is at the end of this verse. Jesus said to him, on the other hand, it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Interestingly enough, he quotes Deuteronomy, and he's quoting this really verse 16 of the text that we read from Deuteronomy. He's quoting it word for word, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. Israel didn't learn that lesson. Initially, they didn't know that lesson. They didn't put their trust in God. They're saying, God isn't going to provide for me, and so we got to have water, and they're going to call on God to bring them water or do something grand for them. They're missing what really matters. They have not put their trust in God. And Jesus is going to trust God and not try to manipulate God. See, that's the real danger. The real danger is we want to manipulate God and make Him do what we want. We say, God, I will if You will only. You know, I'll be faithful to You and I'll go to church every Sunday and I'll do this if You will do this for me. You can't do that. That's missing the point. As God's ideal son, Jesus will fulfill what God told Israel to do in the first place. And I think that's interesting. That may be the reason that each of these temptations is Jesus' response to each of those temptations with a passage out of Deuteronomy. Because the book of Deuteronomy is Moses' call for Israel to realize who they ought to be, and Israel doesn't ever quite learn the lesson. But Jesus knows the lesson. He knows what it's all about. We sang a song a little while ago, O Thou Fount of Every Blessing, just a few moments ago. In fact, the last song we sang, O Thou Fount of Every Blessing, because God is the source of all of the blessings, and that was the message that Israel should have known. They shouldn't have been worrying about water. God has provided them with water wherever they've been and food wherever they've been. Why are they now saying, why, you know, God, hey, you got to come through here, God. They're putting God to the test because they haven't trusted Him. This passage is very much a passage about putting your trust in God. It's amazing that we can trust an airplane, a tin can, that's going to be flying that high and that fast with people that we don't know flying it, but we can't trust God to provide us with what we need and to answer our prayers. But that's the kind of God we serve, one who can be depended upon. You can't count on those planes. We've seen that, right, with all of the plane crashes and everything else. It's a terrible time to talk about that kind of thing because with the crashes and other things that we've heard about in recent weeks, we're all afraid now to fly. I'm not afraid to fly. She's shaking her head. No, I'm not either. I'm not afraid to fly either. But it's interesting that I'm trusting that tin can, but sometimes I don't trust God. And you'll remember that Jesus will try to bring that lesson across to His disciples even in the Sermon on the Mount. He'll say, you know, if God takes care of the birds of the air and the flowers that grow in the field, surely He'll take care of you. Don't you understand that? Don't put God to the test. Just trust Him. Trust God. That's the important lesson for you to take home with you this evening. Put your trust in Yahweh God. He will indeed deliver, and He will come to your aid, and He'll hear your prayers. We're going to sing a song now that we're going to use as an invitation song, which we always do whenever we gather, to give folks an opportunity to respond if they need to respond in any way, to confess Jesus as Lord or perhaps for prayers, but we'll be happy to assist you in any way we can. If you need to come, come as we stand and as we sing.
Your only son.